Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinematic Adventures. Don't forget, if you guys are listening to us on the go, you can find us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, YouTube, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find more of our content on our website, themisfitfaction.com. There you find links to not only this show, but some of our other shows, like the Multiverse Fancast and MF Uncensored. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Paul, with me via the Zoom studio, and from your mom's diary is Sean. Sean, how are you today?
I am just great, Paul. How are you?
I'm so great. I'm so fantastically great. I think I'm going to start actually putting that like as a little title card. Sean, from your
I'm
mom's
great.
Diary. No, Sean, from your mom's diaries.
Oh, Sean's from your mom's diary? Okay. That's
yeah.
Fair.
I'm
actually impressed you keep going. You've been...
I think it's going to be a thing. I think it should really be a thing. Sean, from your mom's diary. Like that's... I think it should be a thing.
A t-shirt? Or am I going to have my own t-shirt?
I will give you access to the t-shirts that you can also buy on themisfitfaction.com, and I will let you design any t-shirt that you want.
Ah, oh, geez, thank you. All right.
You can use the Canva, you can use the t-shirt printing thing that we definitely have shirts available, themisfitfaction.com, and make sure, like, you know, while you're there, check it out. But anyway, so yeah, we are back and we are continuing from one of our previous episodes where we are going to be talking about The Mummy Returns, and we're also going to very briefly talk about The Mummy Tomb of the Dragon Emperor, The Mummy the Animated Series, The Scorpion King 9-movie franchise. What? Stupid. I don't know how that one happened. I really don't know how that one happened. But we're going to spend the majority of our episode talking about The Mummy Returns, and because Sean and I have both seen The Mummy Returns, we've also both seen Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. I know neither one of us have seen The Scorpion King.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, and I actually watched the animated series when it aired. So
yeah, I don't recall the animated series much, but definitely one we'll talk about it a little.
Should we talk about the ride at Universal?
I'd be down. I love that ride. It's
that's
so great.
That's a great ride. But let's rewind the clock. We have 1999, the original Mummy comes out, and it was a huge hit. I think we said on a budget around $80 million, it walked away with 400 plus. So it was no slouch in terms of box office. Mm-hmm. And as we said, we really enjoyed the first movie. The first movie was a really good time. Now, the second movie, because obviously a sequel is inevitable. It's going mm-hmm. to happen. We all know that. So 2 years later, in 2001, Stephen Sommers returns with Brendan Fraser, Rachel Weisz. The whole crew pretty much comes back for The Mummy Returns. Initial thoughts on The Mummy Returns, Sean?
Well, I can tell you this. I was extremely excited for it. This is 2001, mm-hmm. summer of 2001. So this is, we had Star Wars Phantom Menace come out. So this is before Attack of the Clones. But this, honestly, I'm trying to think, in my childhood, early teen years, this is the first real sequel that like we were clamoring for and we couldn't wait to see. And then obviously we get all the Star Wars movies, we get all the Marvel and all that stuff. But this, as I recall, was the first real sequel that was coming out. And we were just like, oh, we have to see this. This looks like it's going to be really good. We love the original and we can only imagine this is going to be a lot better. You know, it's going to be, you know, great story, really cool. All the characters are back. And yeah, it was, as a kid, I liked it. It was a fun time, really enjoyable. But as an adult, I look back on it and there are a lot of flaws with this movie. Which we'll go over in the episode here. But overall, it's a fun time. I can't deny that.
All right. So ready?
It's a fun movie. Yeah.
2001. Here are the top 10 films of 2001. You ready for this year? This year was wild. Yeah. We'll go backwards. Number 10, Hannibal. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Number 9, Planet of the Apes with Marky Mark. Mm-hmm. Number 8. Now, you mentioned sequels that we were excited for. This one was actually one that I was excited for. That's Jurassic Park 3.
Oh, okay. I forgot about Jurassic Park.
We try and forget about that movie. That's fine.
I love Jurassic Park 3.
Don't you dare. How dare you?
Oh, I love Jurassic. I will stand by Jurassic Park 3 like I stand by X-Men Last Stand.
Oh, my God. Why are we friends? Jeez. Number 7, The Mummy Returns.
I know your trigger words.
Number 7. Hey. Oh, okay. So number 7 is The Mummy Returns. Number 6 is Pearl Harbor, which sucked, and I miss you. Number 5, Ocean's 11. Solid.
Solid movie, yes.
Number 4, Shrek. The start of something so amazing we never knew. Mm-hmm. Number 3, Monsters, Inc. Number mm-hmm. 2, Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. And number 1, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, or the Sorcerer's Stone if you're in America. So, Great year. I'm trying to think any other films that really like came out in 2001. Like those are obviously the top 10, but let's see. You had The Accidental Spy, 30 Years to Life, The Hold Up Down, Evolution. I remember Evolution. Let's see.
Beautiful Mind.
Beautiful Mind, Josie and the Pussycats. Yeah.
Never saw it.
They're all three of them are going to be at AwesomeCon. I'm so excited. That's so weird.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Donnie Darko, that's another one. Big, big.
Pulp
People love
classic.
that movie. Yeah. I like that movie. I've only seen it the one time, though, because it hurt my head. Blow, and that's pretty much Bubble Boy. I love Bubble Boy. Pablo Schreiber's film debut in Bubble Boy. Stop it. That's
Bubble
horrible.
Boy and Donnie Darko came out in the same year. He
What
had
is.
those two movies at the same. Wow.
That's
I
what it
thought
says.
Donnie Darko was earlier than that.
I don't know. Donnie Darko is one of those films that like has such a cult following that I don't even know when it came out. Let's see. Come on, help me out here. Where's Donnie Darko? I just had it. Stupid. There you are. Donnie Darko came out. Yeah, January 19th, 2001. Yeah, and August 24th, 2001 was Bubble Boy, which I love that movie. It's so bad.
Who's the girl in Bubble Boy?
No,
No, the girl
Marley
is not.
Marley Shelton.
Marley Shelton. Yes.
Yeah, she hasn't really done a whole lot since.
She was huge in the late 90s, early 2000s. I feel like she was in everything.
She was in Never Been Kissed, Pleasantville, Sin City. She has like a no-name sort of thing. And Scream 4, Scream, and then some TV stuff. But for the most part, yeah, that's pretty much it. Oh, what a great year in film, 2001. Tom Hardy's film debut in Black Hawk Down. I totally missed that one. Wow. All right. Well, let's get back to what we're actually talking about because otherwise we get distracted. Whoops. I'm not finding clips for all these movies, by the way, that we just mentioned. I'm not doing it. I'm sorry.
You give it to yourself, so.
All right. So the film starts off very similar to the first movie where it starts off back in the day in 3067 BC. What a time. Like, why are you laughing? What is wrong with
Because
you?
you just said back in the day. I
Back
just
in the
like.
day. Back in it's like the day, like before Jesus. That's what BC stands
Just
for.
like the last one, it started back in the day.
Back in the day, you know? I'm gonna do the same style of recap that we did. So just buckle up, buddy. All
All
right.
right, seatbelts
All right. So there's this guy. His name is the Scorpion King. We never really find out his actual name in this. And he's played by or do you want to do the cast first before I do the recap?
sure, Paul.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. All right, so I mean, it's not going to be long because basically, mostly the entire cast from the first one has returned for the sequel. Brendan Fraser, Rachel Weisz, John Hannah, Arnold Vosloo, Odette Fehr. Patricia Velasquez as Mila, the reincarnated form of Anak Su Na Moon. I was actually kind of shocked. I
I thought it was the
am
same person.
impressed that they brought her back for the sequel. Usually you would think
Oh,
of a
yeah.
role in the first one where it's just, a walk-on role, it felt like that they would recast her, but no, they stuck with the same actress. Okay, so these are the new additions. We have Freddie Both as Alex O'Connell, Rick and Evelyn's 9 or 10 year old son.
Yeah, he's the youngest.
A lot of names I'm gonna have trouble saying. Alan Armstrong as Baltus Hafes, the cult leader. Abkanoy Ajabe as Lachna, one of the enforcers of the cult. He would, of course, go on to later be in G.I. Joe, Rise of the Cobra. He was Killer Croc in the first Suicide Squad movie.
What a classic.
Sean Parks as Izzy Buttons, Rick's friend and pilot.
I like Dizzy.
And then we have Bruce Byron, Joe Dixon, and Tom Fisher as three thieves who are contracted by the cult to claim the bracelet of Anubis. And that's about, big one. It is the first ever film role of a man named Dwayne Johnson, who has the nickname. I'm just blanking on what it is.
Scorpion King.
It's The Rock.
I thought it was the sand in this because, he's mostly in the desert.
Who would have thought 23 years ago that this would just be basically start a
Whole new
unbelievable
career, like a whole new thing. Like, say what you will about Dwayne Johnson. Like, I like him. I like him plenty. And I love him, in wrestling and all that stuff. We watched the show Young Rock. Is he a little over played out, maybe? Like, and I think he's starting to realize it. Like, he came out with just a slew of so many movies at once, and they were very similar, like same type of character over and over again. I actually really like Central Intelligence, where he was not typical Dwayne Johnson, and he was a little like almost like creepy, socially awkward Dwayne Johnson. And I think it actually worked in his favor, and I want to see him kind of try and branch out a little bit. But I still love when him and Kevin Hart get together and they do anything, it's usually a pretty good time.
Yeah, no, I agree. It took him a while to get going. I mean, he would do these like smaller action films, like Walking Tall and stuff like that. And
Oh, yeah.
it wasn't until he did a couple of Disney movies. He did, what was it, The Game Plan and like the Escape to Witch Mountain.
Tooth Fairy.
But I feel like it really didn't hit a crescendo until he really got into the Fast and the Furious franchise. And that's where it really just was nonstop for him.
You know,
And stuff since.
Race to Witch Mountain also pointed out one of the most important movie things that I never noticed. They don't have the headrests on the front seats of the cars. Because there's the meme of him looking over his shoulder at the kids in the back, and it's like a very popular meme. And yeah, they like the top shows like the girl, like, you know, they don't put the headrest on the front seats of the car so they can see the actors. And then the bottom shot is him looking over his shoulder in the front seat. So it's very funny. I may throw that in there. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway. All right.
I forget he's the bad guy in Get Smart.
Oh yeah, that's right. Spoiler alert for Get Smart. Oh God.
And then he had that funny little cameo in the Reno 911 movie, which I always thought was great.
Yeah. We gotta do
Yeah.
Get Smart at some point. That's a good one. We like that one.
But really, he didn't really become a blockbuster name until he joined the Fast and the Furious franchise.
Yeah, that was really what caught
And
him.
that's not a knock on him. He's certainly proven that he can carry films on his own, but it wasn't immediate stardom for him. He
Right.
worked to get there,
Oh, I'll say what
which,
you will about Dwayne Johnson. He is one of the hardest working guys. Like you,
yeah,
I've on social
absolutely.
media, like just his working out alone, and then all the stuff that he does. Like he's a really hardworking dude, and I have a lot of respect for it. All right,
Yeah.
is that it? Is that the whole cast? We good?
That's the whole cast, sir.
All right, so let's try this again. So back in the day of 3067 BC, you know, back in the day, so we got this guy. He's the Scorpion King, and he's like, "Hey, I'm gonna take over the whole world," and he doesn't because he sucks, and he ends up like losing this big battle, and he's sent into exile. And while he's sent into exile, he's like, "Hey, God Anubis, if you give me your army, I'll give you my soul." And I'm pretty sure Dwayne Johnson's soul is worth a lot more now, but I mean, he probably got it at a bargain at this time. So Anubis knew beforehand how popular The Rock was going to be, so that's why he's like, "Hey, I got you." So he sells his soul, and he gets this giant pyramid with a huge diamond thing and an oasis and all this stuff so that he survives, and he gets an army of like jackal looking warriors. Now, what's funny is we're gonna knock the CGI at the end. We're gonna destroy the CGI Rock later in this episode. I thought the actual like the jackal like warriors looked pretty good, but that's also because they're never with people for the most part until the final battle. And I think
Yeah.
the uncanny valley is not there because they're not superimposing Dwayne Johnson's face onto. So he takes over this whole thing and he's like, "Hey, I got this. We're good." Anubis is like, "Hey, I'm gonna steal your soul and put my army back until it's time to take over the world later." Now, fast forward. Okay. So we went from back in the day to back in another day in 1933. I like how the synopsis actually says AD in case anybody was very concerned. Rick and Evelyn are exploring these ancient ruins. Now, apparently, Evie has been getting like these weird dreams, magic dreams of visions of the past. And she's like, "Hey, my visions pointed us here. This is where we got to go." And Rick's like, "That's stupid. You're a silly goose. I don't think you know what you're talking about." And she's like, "Hey," presses like a button on the wall. "How did I know that then?" And Rick's like, I wanted Rick to just be like, "Because you study ancient Egypt, you come on, like stop." Now, while they're exploring this place, they're seeing all these things. And they find the bracelet of Anubis there. At the same time, we get introduced to one of the most annoying children in movie history, and that is Alex O'Connell. What are your thoughts on Alex?
I mean, he's all right.
He's
He's
all right. He's just.
the plot device to the whole movie, basically. And but yeah, he's a typical 9, 10-year-old. He's annoying.
Yeah. They get
But
attacked, though, by three bandits who are also there looking for the same bracelet. And we find out that it's actually a cult that's trying to resurrect Imhotep, and they want to use him to defeat the Scorpion King and claim Anubis's army so they can be like, "Hey, we're gonna take over the world." And you know, Imhotep's just gonna be cool with it, like, because you know, he's not a bad guy at all. Dramatic eye roll for effect. So they manage to get there, they get out of there. Alex like saves them because there's booby traps and they almost drown, and Alex is a pain in the ass. And somehow, I like how in movies, mundane child activities can totally thwart full-grown adults. Like, I love the scene in Family Guy where it's like with competent robbers in Home Alone, and they're like, "Oh, hey, there's some water on those steps. We probably shouldn't step there." Or, "Hey, I almost slipped on these micro machines," you know? But anyway, so they get back to London, and we find out also, I know we mentioned this in our last episode, they are rich. They have a huge, sprawling estate. Somehow, Jonathan's still living in their attic. We don't know how that happened, but Jonathan's there, and he's got this nice little scepter. And at the same time, the bad guys are like, "Huh, let's go get that bracelet." And so they're ambushing them. Jonathan brings home like this beautiful, like vapid supermodel who thinks that like he did all the things from the first movie. And he's got this golden stick. All right. And he's like, "Hey, I took this scepter from the mummy and, you know, beat him because that's just Jonathan." So the cult shows up and first they attack Jonathan thinking he's Rick. And it's a great scene. I actually really enjoy that whole scene. And the best is when Rick walks upstairs. He's like, "Jonathan, I thought I said no more wild parties." Oh, when you're popular, because he's got like the cult's like about to torture him with a
Yeah,
snake.
they got a snake in front of them. Yeah.
And there is nothing more badass than when she throws a snake at Rick and he catches it and then throws it back. I'm like, that's badass. So
He has some badass moments in this movie.
they dial his action level up just one notch. Like he was great in
Yeah.
the first movie, just a little bit more in this movie. I still think George of the Jungle could beat him, but that's not the point, Sean. I wish you would stop bringing it up.
Sorry.
Yeah. So at the same time, we got what's the Lachna, that's him.
Yeah.
Lachna is downstairs, and Alex has accidentally put the bracelet on. So he's like getting all these visions that only he can see. Like they actually make it a point to show like a spot, like a shot overhead where he's looking, you don't see anything, and then it cuts back to his perspective, and you see all these different like visions of Egypt. So they're like, "Hey, we gotta get going." And Jonathan and Rick manage to escape, but Evie gets captured. At the same time, we also had the return of our good friend, Ardeth, who we got a brief glimpse of earlier because we find out that the cult is being kind of, I don't want to say run, but the reincarnation of Anaxi Nemun, who you mentioned, the same actress comes back. Did they mention what her act like her name is beforehand, or just she's
Her
just
name is Mila Nye, but they don't get, again, you could say it's a fault of the movie, maybe not it's a fault of the movie, but they don't go into when was she, reincarnated, is this something that happened due to them bringing Anaxumun back in the first movie? They don't get into that. It's just she's back, she's reincarnated, she knows where Imhotep is buried.
So
Boom, boom, boom.
we find out that she has similar visions to what Evie's dealing with too, because they're both reincarnated in body only. Like Imhotep says that to this woman who looks like an Anaxenamone. He's like, "Hey, you're just her body. We got to get her soul back and put it into you." And she's like, "All right, cool." But that's fast forwarding. So unfortunately, Evie gets kidnapped and the heroes have to go rescue her at the museum. And this is where we start getting all of our action movie lines. Like, 2 years ago, this would have seemed really strange. Ch-ch-ch. Like all that. But as they're getting ready, they notice that, or Ardeth notices a tattoo on Rick's arm. And he's like, "Hey, if I were to tell you this very specific phrase, what would you say?" And then Rick answers with like the actual answer to the phrase. He's like, how did that happen? I forget what the phrase is, so I'm not going to try and do it." And Ardeth's like, "Hey, you're actually a warrior of God." And Rick's like, "I know, but like, stop. What
He's
did you
the
say?"
son of the Magi.
Yeah, so he's like, designated hero of he's the good guy. Let's just say it, he's the good guy. But he's like, "Nah, I don't believe in destiny. You got the wrong guy." Ch-ch-ch. Like that action.
Well, as we'll get into a little more, I was kind of, they didn't need to do that. Like, I feel like that was just, didn't need that to happen, but
No, it was
okay. Well,
unnecessary subplot. And
yeah.
also I'm not a big fan of the whole destiny type thing. But anyway. So they managed to resurrect Imhotep and he's like, "Hey, I'm back," as like my skeleton form. And all right, what are
But
we gonna
this
do?
time he had eyes. This time he had eyes.
He had eyes, thank God, because otherwise, he wouldn't be able to see what's going on. And so they're gonna offer Evie as a sacrifice, but Rick's like, "Nah, I'm gonna jump over this fire in a cool action shot that made no sense logistically and save Evie." Well, Ardeth's like raining down fire, right? Like a boss. So they managed to escape on a double-decker bus because Jonathan breaks the
Only thing they can
key.
find.
What was that?
This is the only thing he can find because he breaks the key in the car.
In like the nice Rolls Royce. Oops, I didn't know those keys.
What's wrong with my car?
I don't know what kind of force is required to break a key like that, but good job, Jonathan. You're very strong.
In 1930s, I feel like it probably wasn't much.
Not much. They were just paper keys, didn't you know? They're made of wood. So they escape on a double-decker bus. And it's a fun, like, action set piece.
Yeah, that's a fun action sequence, I have to admit, with the four, like, big mummy things chasing after them.
Yeah. Oh, not these guys again! Basically. I hate mummies. They manage to escape. They defeat the four mummies that are chasing them, but somehow they still... Alex gets kidnapped because they realize that he's got this bracelet on, right? So they need him. And they can't just cut his arm off and take it for... I think they talk about doing that at one point, but they're like, nah, that won't work. So they kidnap Alex and they start traveling the world to find this hidden oasis of the Scorpion King. Now, while this is happening, Alex is leaving little clues around, like little sand sculpture. I can't make a basic sandcastle. And this kid's like, hey, watch this. And making highly detailed sand sculptures. Now, what his parents do, the O'Connells, go with their Rick's former associate, Izzy, who I love the whole running bit about him getting shot. Like every time they hang out, he gets shot. They do. There's a nice little payoff at the end where he's like, at least you didn't get shot. But no. But it's a great scene. But obviously, they are going a little beat for beat from the first movie. To a point. Except Rick doesn't have a single drink in this movie. I don't remember.
No, I don't think he ever really gets an opportunity.
I think if you were drinking in the first movie and suddenly your drink turned to blood, you may not want to have a drink afterwards.
That's very true. Very true. Yeah.
Now, at the same time, Imhotep's like, hey, I'm going to put a Noxian Moon soul into this body. And, they have a little ceremony. At the same time, Evie starts getting visions. And we find out that Evie is a descendant of Princess Nefertiti, the daughter of...
Okay.
Yeah, she is a reincarnation.
Is she reincarnated? Is she a reincarnation or she's just a descendant?
I want to say it's reincarnation. Like the same issue that Anoxidum Moon's dealing with. She's a reincarnation of Princess Nefertiti, who was the daughter of the Pharaoh from the first movie. So we get this vision where it's Anoxidum Moon and Nefertiti are having like a demonstrative, like, ceremonial battle. And they're using ninja size. Like Raphael ninja size. And I'm like, those weren't a thing. That is legit. This movie's so unrealistic. And that was, I remember as a kid, it was a sticking point. I was like, those are ninja weapons, not pharaoh weapons. Get out of here. And like, she starts getting more and more memories and she almost dies. Like she almost falls off the
jumps off the, then we get that little Back to the Future Part Two, like moment where we're seeing the beginning of the first movie through her eyes.
Because she's across the... She's the one who calls the guards.
She's the one who calls the guards.
Just across the way. I don't know why they're not living in the same palace, but super inconvenient for this sake. Yeah. Now, they manage to get to the oasis, and we get our rehash of the first movie where Imhotep's like, hey, these guys are following... Hey, it's those guys again. Like, they're still coming. So I'm going to use... We don't got any sands, but watch this. We got water now because we made...
We got water.
And he's like, water attack. And... gets him. And apparently Izzy also has high-powered jets on his blimp, is a weird thing I'd say. You know, in 1933, that was totally commonplace. Did you ever hear of the... What was the Zeppelin that blew up? That one.
The Hindenburg?
Yeah, this was early Hindenburg. All right, what are you doing? So I do like the water scene. I know you and I kind of talked about it in our mummy episode. Which do you prefer, the water or sand?
I prefer the sand just because I thought it worked better. It was more of a fun image to me. The water one to me was just felt like a copy of the previous movie. If they had done the water one first and then did the same in the second one, I'd probably be saying the same thing about it. But I just thought the sand one was really cool. And the water one just kind of felt like I saw that already.
But they crash and they're like, all right, I'm going to fix the blimp. You guys go ahead. So the heroes start moving and we get the scene with the little pygmies. That was always a creepy scene as a kid. That scene creeped me out. Like, those little things were creepy. And I didn't like them. But we get our Alex has to... we didn't even mention. Alex has to be at this pyramid by a certain time. Like, when the sun rises on a certain day. Otherwise, he's going to die. Like, he's not going to be alive anymore. So, Ardeth manages to defeat Lachna. And they manage to get The whole cult dies from the pygmies. Like, the pygmies kill everybody except for the heroes, because that's just how it goes. They manage, like, I don't know. I'm not a scientist by any stretch of the imagination.
Don't sell yourself short.
I can barely spell PhD, much less probably ever get one. But I feel like when the sun rises, it doesn't dramatically go across the landscape in a nice straight line while the hero is running with his son in his arms. I just don't think it's a thing. But again, I'm no brain scientist.
It was a fun little like, oh, we gotta race against time, and then he like basically dives and throws him like head first into the temple so
Oh yeah.
as he gets out of the sun.
And you know what though? Here's where the movie tone shifts hard, where it's like, yay, happy, where every like the bracelet comes off, we're like, yeah. And then Nox Moon straight up shanks Evie. Like
Oh
just,
yeah, she walks right up to her and it's just like, ugh.
oh, and you're dead. And she dies. Like, she's not alive anymore. Yeah, like that's how serious this situation is, Sean. She's not alive. She's currently unalived. So inside the pyramid, Imhotep crosses a boundary that takes away all of his powers, and they're like, "Hey, you got to fight the Scorpion King as a guy, as a regular guy, in order to defeat him." And I don't know, if I was him, I would have just walked backwards, and then just destroyed that little portal thing. Could have probably, thought that through a little bit. And the main guy from the cult puts on the bracelet and manages to like activate the pyramid and the Scorpion King, and it gets his arm like completely ripped off. That was a little graphic. That part was a little graphic.
Yeah, similar to like the eyes being gouged out in the first movie. You gotta be a little bit of a queasy moments.
So Rick rolls in and he's like, "Hey, I'm gonna kick Imhotep's ass because it's really his fault that Evie's not alive anymore." At the same time, Alex and Jonathan realize, "Hey, let's use the Book of the Dead to realive Mom. Like, we can do this." And of course, it's a stork. Like, that is I love
I
that
know
combat.
this one. I know this one.
Jonathan's trying to fight an Ox and a Moon and just getting like smacked around like viciously. Like she's like scratching him and he's like, "Ah, stop." Now we get the night. I like the fight between Imhotep and Rick. Like, especially when Rick realizes that he's mortal, like he punches him in the
Yeah.
face, and he's like, "Oh, I'm gonna mess you up." And again, apparently the priest of Egypt, like he was a priest who again waxed like a Brazilian supermodel, can actually fight. Who knew? Like, who knew he was gonna throw hands and do all right? So they're fighting back and forth. Evie gets resurrected, and the Scorpion King comes to life, and it is the worst. Most 2001 PlayStation 2 graphics of all time.
Oh my God. Even in the theater, you were kind of like, this doesn't look too great. Okay. This movie's been all about effects, the whole movie. Like, and the effects are, for the most, at the time, the effects were really cool. Even now, you look back, there are some that are a little junky, but that one,
It's just rough. There's no saving it.
it was rough at the get-go, and it was just so bad. And I don't know whose decision it was. Was it like, do we have to have the rock's face as an image here? What are we doing? It just felt like either they ran out of time or something. I don't know what it was, but it is really, really bad.
For the record, the Scorpion King's real name in this, like the actual character, is Matthias of Akkad. I guess that's probably from another one of the movies, but that's funny. So the Scorpion King comes out, and Rick discovers hieroglyphics that show that the golden stick that Jonathan's been carrying around this whole time is actually a spear. And it's like a super
Yeah.
spear. It is the spear that's like the business. So there is a great scene where he's like, "It's a spear. The golden stick thing. It's a spear." Jonathan just looks at it. He's like, "It doesn't look like a spear." I don't know why. The two of them always are fun when they're on scene together. And I think this movie, for some reason, they partnered Jonathan up with Alex a lot more. And
Yeah, which I kind of liked. I thought that was funny, the two of them back and forth, because like
because
I
it's the
think
one.
Alex is just like, this guy's a moron. How is he my uncle? Like
But so they managed to defeat the Scorpion King, and somehow Rick, and also at the same time, Ardeth and the Medjay are fighting the risen army of Anubis. And I love the scene. They're like, "Hey, we're doing all right. Like, I think we got this, guys." And then
And then
he goes over the ledge, and like, and there's
they
just
come over the dune and it's like millions and you're just like, ah, shit.
Well then, all right, let's start praying. You just see him take out Benny's keychain with all the different religious icons from the first movie. Just start going. But so Rick manages to defeat him, the Scorpion King, and tells him, because basically if you defeat the Scorpion King, you have a choice. You can take control of the army for yourself, or you can send them all back to the underworld. I mean, either way, you win. Like, good job.
Pretty so much.
Sends him back to the underworld, saves the day. But somehow both him and Imhotep fall into a ravine on the same side, despite being on opposite ends of said ravine. But anyway, again, this movie, continuity, don't need it that much. And they're hanging on. And, you know, like he sees that Evie's alive. He's like, don't you dare come save me. And she's like, I'm going to do it. And he's like, don't you do it. And she does it, dodging every single CGI stalagmite that you could possibly imagine. The stalagmites were more realistic in the Aladdin video game for the Super Nintendo. But anyway. So she,
right.
Yeah, that's a solid reference, right?
Solid
yeah.
reference. I like it.
Right. Hey, thank you. But she manages to get to Rick and she's like, I'm going to help you because we're truly in love. And Imhotep's like, hey, babe. And Anaximund's like, nah, I'm out. And then she dies horrifically instead.
Yeah, she falls into with the scarabs.
Yeah. And Imhotep's like, oh, she left me. That was my reason for being alive. And he's like, I'm out. And he jumps into hell from Constantine. Like
both endings to both of them were just very kind of a letdown, I thought. I thought they could have done that a whole lot better.
But then the heroes get saved by Izzy in his dirigible, and they get the giant diamond, and everybody's happy. And that's
pull me in.
Yep. And you know, Ardeth's like, all right, I'll see him in the third movie. Joke's on him. We don't see him in the third movie, unfortunately. I think that's also one of the biggest issues with the third movie. We'll talk about that in a second. But on a budget of $98 million, this movie walked away with $435 million. Star City rating for The Mummy Returns.
Give it a 3.
I'm going to go 3.5. I like this movie. I think it's solid. I don't think it's better in terms of like movie quality than the first one. But I remember as a kid liking this one more than the first one.
This one is an action. You know, they go straight for just the action and the effects in this movie. They're like story be damned. We're doing the effects and some really good set pieces and stuff. And I totally agree. As a kid, I was like, oh, this is really cool. Yeah, you know, but just, you know, watching it later on, I'm just kind of like, it's just, and then I would see it again with Van Helsing. And this was the precursor to what Van Helsing was going to become. And, you know, and it's a shame because I don't know why they couldn't just go back to what they did in the first Mummy. I mean, I thought that movie was so good. You know, you got so in love with the effects that you're like, oh, all right, this is all we got to do. But yeah.
So here's a question. Would you have enjoyed if Van Helsing was actually like if that had been the original Dark Universe to start? Van Helsing in the Mummy series.
You're saying introduce Van Helsing in the Mummy movies or had Van Helsing been the first movie in the Dark Universe?
Well, no, have the Mummy franchise secretly have been the start of this Dark Universe and have Van Helsing connect to it.
I mean, that would have been great. And maybe that would have been his idea if Van Helsing had been more successful. I don't know. But could you have had Van Helsing meet up with the O'Connells? That would have been cool. I wouldn't have minded that. But yeah,
Who would win in a fight? Van Helsing or Rick O'Connell? No werewolf powers for Van Helsing.
It's tough.
I think Rick O'Connell.
Yeah, probably O'Connell, but it would be a pretty good fight between him and Van Helsing.
Here's why I think Rick O'Connell, because Rick O'Connell managed to hit things a lot more with guns. Like a lot more. Like Van Helsing literally fires like 9 trillion silver arrows, and that's a lot of money. Like those were expensive. Yeah. But anyway, all right, so let's fast forward. And we're not gonna do the whole plot for this movie because in all honesty, we just didn't like it as much. And that is The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. So this movie, 6-7 years later. So like not a little bit of a break between the two of the movies.
Yeah.
It comes out 7 years later and it takes place in China, which
and it's directed by Rob Cohen. It's not directed by Stephen Sommers. He was only the producer, but it's written by, and I didn't know this. It's written by Alfred Goff and Miles Millar, who created Smallville.
And you can feel that. It's funny. Goff and Miller did a bunch of movies at the same time that Smallville was super popular. They did this. They did I Am Number Four, which I really enjoy, but it's like not that good of a movie. And that was another failed franchise. But like they were hot at the time. Smallville was a big hit still. I mean, Smallville just, what was it, season six at this
It's
time?
2008, so yes, yeah, season six, possibly season seven.
And like that's where the show arguably peaked.
Well,
But
that's where they left, so it was after season seven, so.
and it revolves more around Alex finding the Dragon Emperor, and played by Jet Li, because Jet Li was huge at the time. This was like the big Jet Li era. And the most important thing to know about this is the recasting of Evelyn O'Connell, played by now Maria Bello. And I liked Maria Bello, and I enjoy her work, but it was jarring, and I didn't like it. And the two of them just didn't have the same chemistry.
No, they didn't have the same chemistry. And when you clearly make a point to point that out in the movie, I think takes away. If you had just not even brought it up, just done it, in a better introduction way of her in the movie, I think it would have been like, okay, whatever. Because we've seen movies where they recast someone before and it doesn't, it's not that big of a deal. But when they actually make a joke of it in the beginning, I was kind of like, okay,
A little
we
cringy.
get it. Get it, but yeah, it's a bummer because between the sequel and this movie, Rachel Weisz became an Academy Award winner. I don't know exactly why she turned this movie down. Was it a scheduling thing? Was she just above it? Was it like, I just no, I'm good. We really never found out. So, and it's surprising. I mean, no, nothing against Maria Bello. I really do enjoy her. I like her work. It's like that's a huge drop off. From Rachel Weisz to Maria Bello, you couldn't have gone after another bigger actress, maybe. Again, nothing against Maria Bello. It just seemed like a, just not as big of a name as Rachel Weisz is,
Yeah, so Rachel Weisz didn't come back. She cited problems with the script, in addition to not to just having given birth to her son, which totally makes sense. Bella, like again, she was good, but she also tried to recreate Evie a little in her own image. And I just think, again, the chemistry between her and Brendan Fraser just wasn't the same. They recasted the kid, who they focus a lot more on, like, and apparently, like him and the parents had a falling out, and he's supposedly in school, but he actually got kicked out of like Princeton or wherever it was. And it's fine. Like the movie itself is fine. The effects are pretty good. They stand up for the most part. I like the Yeti scene. That's actually a lot of fun. But I mean, Jet Li, just I love Jet Li. I'm a huge Jet Li fan. I'll watch a lot of Jet Li, and he does have some range. Like there was that movie Unleashed that he did, where he gets to flaunt his dramatic talents, not just his physicality. And that's the other thing. Like he's not very physical in this movie. Like, it's a lot of CGI. I thought the concept was super solid, like the terracotta soldiers and like him being terracotta, like stuff of that was cool, but I don't know, the movie just did not land for me. What about for you?
No, I agree. I honestly have not seen this movie since we saw it in theaters. It was not memorable. It was just, it felt like it was too late to really, keep on the success of the first two. The story was weak. It just didn't have anything to it to me. It really didn't. There was nothing, as I recall, memorable
Yeah, I think
about the movie.
this movie suffers from a severe lack of Imhotep and Ardeth Bay.
That's fair.
I think,
I
in
mean,
all honesty, you know what would have been better? Had they actually resurrected Imhotep themselves to fight the Dragon Emperor. Like that's how powerful this new threat was. That could have been really cool. And like seeing the two of them work together.
have been interesting, but yeah, I mean, I would have been a little, I think, again, like, would it have been stale to just bring Imhotep back a third time? Like,
But
I give him
we saw
credit
it didn't
for.
help that they didn't this time.
I know, that's why I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, what would have been better? Like, honestly, I think the better answer would have been not making the movie at all. It's just, it's like a third time. Like, are we really believing that they're gonna somehow resurrect this guy a third time and, kill him again? Or, but I like your idea. Your idea would have been interesting, which I kind of feel like should have been like the storyline from Mummy Returns in a way, facing against the Scorpion King. I think that would have worked as well now. But yeah, I mean, even Michelle Yeoh being in it, I don't remember. Like,
Oh
I
yeah,
just
she
don't
plays the
or
mom.
anything about it.
They were gonna make a sequel, and like it was already like good to go. Maria Bello was signed on. Luke Ford was signed on for three more films, And instead, in 2012, that's when Universal was like, you know what? I got an idea. And they're like, what? He's like, I think we should definitely.
Okay, let's be fair. It wasn't Universal going like, I got an idea. There was like some filmmakers who were like, hey, we got an
Well,
idea.
in 2012, it was the year, Avengers was like it was happening. Like they proved that cinematic universes could be completely possible.
I will stand by, and I've said this before, I had no problem with Universal wanting to do a Dark Universe movie franchise. They just chose the wrong movie to begin it with.
No,
Any.
they did what most of these big attempts at cinematic universes did. They went too big in their first movie to establish this universe because they wanted to catch up. DC was guilty of it too.
Yeah.
If you rewatch Marvel Phase One, the first movie, Iron Man, it does not reference a bigger universe until the end credit, the post credit scene is where they're like, oh, hey.
I totally get that. I get that. And that's why I said they chose the wrong movie. They could have done just a straight mummy movie. They could have just done a Dracula movie, anything. They didn't have to bring Dr. Jekyll into it, all that stuff.
Well, they did Dracula Untold, and Dracula Untold was
But
fine.
that wasn't
I thought it was part of the Dark Universe.
no one can specify whether it was or wasn't.
Yeah, it's one
Like
of those.
it just had a scene at the end that kind of felt like it belonged, but it was never part of the Dark Universe.
But
Because you even look at like the press releases for the Dark Universe, like it was always just Tom Cruise, Crow, Johnny Depp, Angelina Jolie, and the girl who played the mummy, and I'm blanking on her name, the actress's name, but like they were like, oh, we got it all set, guys. Yay, here we go. And I'm like, no, like, no,
don't.
please stop.
I think in theory it could have worked. Like we got other films like The Wolfman came out around this time too, which we enjoyed enough. Like it was okay.
I love the Wolfman.
Oh, the Benicio del Toro one.
Oh yeah. I love
Yeah,
that movie until the last 5 minutes, and that's it. But
that's the issue. Having the dad also be the werewolf, a werewolf.
that's where it lost me, but for the most part, that movie is I love it. So
It's
good.
dark, like depressingly
Oh,
dark.
that's why I love it.
Yeah.
They were like, no holds barred, here we go.
I would have liked to see Benicio del Toro like share the screen with a character like Imhotep just for that contrast. It would have been a lot of fun. And
That would have been.
you and I both really like Van Helsing, the movie. We recognize it's got some flaws. That's a
A
movie
lot of flaws.
we should talk about that movie at some point. But I
Yeah.
actually really do enjoy Van Helsing. But going back to this, I'm going to give this movie a 2.5. It is completely middle of the road, average, nothing about it. Because there's only one shot that I always love. It's when the mummy revives and it cuts to Brendan Fraser and he takes out both guns. He's like, here we go again. I was like, yes, that's the action cheese that I love. It's like in Tropic Thunder, all the trailers with Ben Stiller's character, like
Yeah.
Scorcher 9, the big freeze. Who left the fridge open? Like stupid stuff. But 2.5 right there.
Yeah, I'm gonna go two.
Two.
Absolutely unmemorable of a movie. I never plan on really needing to watch it again. And yeah, it's just again, nothing memorable about
Which is
it.
hilarious because on a budget of $145 million. So we didn't even address the budgets went from about 80 to about just shy of 100 to now 145, which with inflation and at the times, it makes sense. It made a box office of $403 million. So it did well financially.
If you look at all three films, they all made almost about the same amount of money. They all made just over $400 million.
I mean,
And
it did really well.
The Mummy Returns, I distinctly remember this, had I think the highest grossing weekend of any movie up to that point. Obviously, later in the year, Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings probably usurped it, but I think it made like $70 million in its opening weekend,
It did really
and
well.
it only did not too. It was one of those word of mouth movies that everybody went to go see it the first weekend, second weekend, and then people were just like, it's not that good. Don't go. And it just kind of died.
Yeah.
This one, I don't remember like when we saw it. I'm sure we saw a midnight showing of it. And I mean, but I don't remember it being that successful. I mean, 400 million is pretty good, I have to give it.
It did
It's
well,
all
yeah,
right.
financially. It's critically, it only has like 13% on Rotten
Oh
Tomatoes.
God, critics probably destroyed this movie.
Yeah, but fast forward, we also had in the interim the Mummy animated series, which we also had the Scorpion King series. Now, again, Sean and I did not watch any of the Scorpion King, and that's fine. They had the Scorpion King in 2002, Scorpion King 2: Rise of a Warrior in 2008, which was, I think, a prequel to it, and this is the like. He's out. Dwayne Johnson's not in these. He's only in the first one. Then the Scorpion King 3, Battle for Redemption in 2012. And again, totally recast. Scorpion King 4, Quest for Power in 2015. And most recently, the Scorpion King Book of Souls in 2018. And now they're talking about an untitled reboot that's coming out. Like, wait, what? And Dwayne Johnson's like involved, which is even funnier.
God.
I don't know. Like, we don't need to. Do we need to? Like, I don't think we need to. But what do I know? I'm just a pretty face. Anyway, so the Scorpion King did well enough that it spawns that direct-to-DVD kind of franchise. Who knows if it's going to be anything when it comes out. And then we also had the Mummy animated series, which premiered, I want to say, September 29, 2001, and went for two seasons, ended in 2003. So right around the time the second movie was out. And it followed a very similar plot to the second movie, and I remember watching it as a kid. I couldn't tell you much about it, but it existed. It was there. It's alive.
It existed.
But this was also like a weird time.
Every Saturday morning cartoon existed.
Yes, every Saturday. But, you know, it's one of those other, like, it's not like Ghostbusters or the real Ghostbusters that we love and can, like, recite episodes a lot more.
It's like Godzilla and the Men in Black cartoon. It's just
very big
like
time for them to do cartoon series based off. Apparently, the Godzilla animated series, I remember watching the first season, was so much better than the actual movie, which is hilarious. And they followed a lot of the same characters.
Yeah.
But anyway, I couldn't tell you, though, anything else about it. But I think that's pretty much going to wrap us up for tonight. What do you think?
I think that's about it. Yeah. Pretty good there.
No, not bad. But we want to thank you guys for listening and or watching. If you guys are on YouTube, make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. Follow us for more. If you guys want more of our content, we're also on every social media platform. We're on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook. Just type in Cinematic Adventures or The Misfit Faction. Odds are you'll find some of our stuff. And while you're there, make sure you guys like it and comment and argue with us and tell us which Mummy movie is your favorite movie down in the comments below. But I think that is going to wrap us up for today. As always, I'm Paul.
I'm Sean.
And we'll see you guys next time.